Hi guys, it's Nick here. Before we get started today, I want to talk to you about a charity that Squawker has supported for some time and that we think you should support too, Football Beyond Borders. Football Beyond Borders, or FBB for short, is a registered UK charity that puts a young person's passion for football at the heart of their education. They do this by running after-school programmes in schools across London, supporting young people at risk of exclusion through a combination of innovative football-themed classroom sessions and fun, high-quality football coaching. On Monday the 17th of October, Football Beyond Borders are hosting the annual Football for All event, highlighting the power of football to promote education and social inclusion. The night will feature a live debate run by their school students, new short films showcasing FBB's talented young people, and a panel discussion hosted by their patron, the renowned football pundit Guillaume Balague, who will be joined by special guests including Eniola Aluko, Leon Mann, and many, many more. So, details. The event will be held at Amnesty International's East London HQ from 7pm until 10pm. So that's Monday, the 17th of October, 7pm till 10pm. Tickets are just £7, or £5 concession if you're a youth or a student, and they can be bought by following this link, sqwk.at/FBB. That's sqwk.at/FBB, all lowercase. For further info, please join the Facebook event page, which will be updated with details and announcements about new special guests as they come in.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and today we'll talk about the return of club football, the Premier League, matches to watch, also a little bit on Liverpool versus Manchester United on Monday night, and also setting the scene for the return of club football in the other big leagues around Europe. I'm joined today by Ollie Young-Miles. How are you doing, Ollie?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm not bad. Rory Briggs is here again.
Hello. Looking forward to the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
It
starts right here on a Thursday. And Greg Stobart is here again.
I think Rory wants your job, mate.
I think he's building up towards deserving it as well.
Just a test.
But before we crack on into the club football again, just look back quickly at the international break, because a fair few things happened and went on. Stokes, what was the thing you think people might have missed the most from the break?
I'll tell you what I think people missed the most. The Netherlands lost their first World Cup qualifier since 2001, that 1-0 defeat to France. And after not qualifying for the Euros and their recent results, I think they've lost 6 and won 1 of their last 7 home matches. Not losing their first loss since 2001. A bit of a shocking stat, that one.
I just don't think they need to set up better. The manager doesn't know what he's doing. Mm.
They're just not really producing players anymore. Top players. You look at this Holland team. There's not one world class star really in that team. There's a few decent players, but it's all very functional rather than, you know, sort of total football that they're used to.
I think friend of Squawker and the podcast, Mikael Jongsma, was saying on Twitter during the game that Memphis Depay seemed like the only player that was actually willing to take players on or do anything. Everybody else just passing sideways and just playing very safe football. As Ollie says, it's not really what we expect from Dutch footballers, is it, Stobes?
No, and Depay a couple of years ago was the great hope as well. I mean, I watched the game. The only two players who did anything for me were Memphis looked a bit sharp and Van Dijk is a monster at centre-back. But other than that, just a lot of, like Rory says, very functional, predictable footballers.
Mm. Rory, what was the thing you think people might have missed from the international break?
They might have missed, over to China for this one. This was last week, the first week of the break.
Been a long break.
But this one in particular caught my eye. It was Syria beating China 1-0 in their World Cup qualifier. And amazing that China have a population of 1.3 billion people. And meanwhile, Syria, and they're going to their sixth year of civil war. Just the gulf, you know, in context is bizarre. Mm. But still showing that football can just live on its own sort of little oasis away from everything and come out with these stories. And also just a bit of context of who the goal scorer was a guy called Mahmoud Al-Mamas, 23, plays in Bahrain at the moment. But he was born in a town or city which is now under the Syrian regime's control, basically a matter of miles away from ISIS and the rebels. So, you know, that's all going on and he's still, you know, scoring against China. So.
Mm. And I mean, China obviously aren't the football giant they want to be, but that was still their first loss at home since, I think, 2011.
Yeah. Then they went and lost to Uzbekistan 2-0. So, their population, they got 30 million people, I looked. But still,
You're very good on the population.
I know, it's my thing. quizzes, yeah. No, but it's, if you're in China, you've got that amount of people, you're investing, you know, millions and millions in your country, your president saying, we are going to be a football powerhouse. You go and visit City last season, things like that, show off to the, you know, David Cameron, and you're losing against, you know, a war-torn country and Uzbekistan.
Their hopes of making Russia 2018 are now in the balance. Mm. So we just see what happens with that one in November when we return to international play. Yeah. But before then, what was the thing that you think people might have missed out on, Ollie?
I'm going to stay in Asia for my one as well and go with Iran, but mainly one player in particular. So they beat South Korea 1-0 in their last match.
Where was Son?
Well, Son did his bit the game before. He scored the winning goal, so he's still flying. Don't worry, Spurs fans. he couldn't do it all on his own in the second game, unfortunately.
But one man could in the second game for Iran.
Yeah, so his name is Sardar Azmoun. He's a 21-year-old striker. He plays for FC Rostov in Russia, who are in the Champions League. They beat Ajax 4-0 to qualify. He scored one of the goals. And yeah, his goal against Korea, South Korea, was his 16th in 22 games. So obviously he's a player of some standing. I think he's been dubbed the Iranian Messi. So make of that what you will. I remember seeing Arsenal linked with him as well, obviously, when he was a teenager. So yeah, he's one to watch, especially in the Champions League this season, I think.
Another one Wenger can say he almost signed as well. If he
carries on improving, then yeah, another player Arsenal missed out on.
Mm-hmm. Just on international football in general as a point. I mean, are we all glad to see the back of this international break, or is it a little bit, does some of us still find the romance in the international side of the game? Stopes?
I hate it. I hated it. I've hated the last 2 weeks. I'm dreading the next one, which is only a month away.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it's time that we put the qualifications all in a month or 6 weeks at the end of the season. We spread the season out properly. You'll probably be able to get a winter break out of that, because at the moment, unfortunately, it just feels like it's disrupting the Premier League. As soon as you get into the Premier League, you get this horrible break, and it's just not fun to watch, and particularly not for us English fans.
I think of all the travelling with players going across the Atlantic or across Africa, it ruins their performance as well. But anyway, speaking of the club football returning, we're going to look now at the preview of the Premier League and the wonderful array of games coming up this weekend, starting off with Chelsea versus Leicester. It's going to be Ranieri's triumphant return to Stamford Bridge as a Premier League winner. Abramovich won't have any regrets about sacking him all those years ago, will he, Ollie?
No, I don't think so. You've got to remember, you know, Abramovich has got through so many managers, and Ranieri wasn't even his. So, I mean, he's so ruthless when with people that he's actually appointed. I don't think Ranieri was ever going to be the right fit for him. Obviously, Leicester went back to Stamford Bridge after they just won the title last year. That game was a bit of a procession, really. This one, completely different. Both teams need to win. And it should be quite an interesting clash. You know, neither side has really caught fire as of yet this season. So,
and Roy, just onto that question of the managers. I mean, the model that Abramovich has used is it might not be the most sustainable one, but 9 different permanent managers in 12 seasons, not counting 2 caretakers. But they've won 13 major honours in that time, including the Champions League, including the Premier League, obviously, and also the Europa League as well. So it works, doesn't it, at Chelsea?
Well, it asks a big question: why bother keeping in one manager if they're just going to do a Wenger or, you know, similar, when you can just get that sort of boom bust situation, you know, miss out on Europe, whatever, then the next season you win a trophy. The fans are seemingly still happy with that, but what does it really mean in the bigger picture?
On Abramovich at Chelsea and Antonio Conte, he's come out and said he's going to back his manager in January after trying to kind of bring down the spending over recent years because of FPP and other concerns like that. Do you think that Conte's had a proper crack of the whip yet? Because they didn't get a lot of their transfer targets in the summer, Stobes. Is it a case of in January the season will properly start for Chelsea?
I don't even think January. I think from what we've seen so far, you're talking next season, because he didn't, you know, Chelsea were a mess last year. They, when Mourinho got sacked in December, they were worried about relegation. Finished 10th, did they? They finished 10th in the league. I mean, that team needs a lot of work, especially when everyone else is improving around you. And they didn't sign a centre-back. You know, Zouma will be back at some point, and maybe that could be the thing that changes their season. But the way Gary Cahill's playing at the moment, John Terry's been injured, he'll be back at the weekend. But there's nothing you can do when you don't have the players, ultimately. You can put the system in place, but he can't improve those defenders.
Gary Cahill, no player has forced more goals to be conceded through individual errors than Gary Cahill this season so far. So,
it's been an absolute nightmare.
Shout out to Gary.
Yeah. Shout out to Gary there, yeah. But one player who has come in this summer, and I think he's already become a bit of a fan favourite, is N'Golo Kante. But we're seeing a different side to him than we saw last year when he won the title with Leicester, Ollie.
Yeah, but I mean, I was looking at Leicester's stats this year compared to last year. I think one of the reasons why they've struggled to match what they did last year is because they're suddenly the team that has to control things. They're making a lot more passes per game. They're making less tackles. They're making fewer interceptions. So I think Kante's role would have changed anyway. So it's interesting to see how he can take that next step and evolve. You know, he's been playing for a small club his whole career. He's suddenly made the big jump to a big club. And I think he's playing all right, but he's not a tempo setter. He's not a passing midfielder. He's a interceptor. So it seems like a bit of a strange one. Chelsea have bought the best defensive midfielder in the Premier League, and they're trying to get him to set the tempo for them and start moves off, which is a bit of a strange one. But I think he's done all right.
I mean, so far this season, he is making 63.86 passes per game, which compares with 39.08 last year. So he's definitely seen more of the ball, trying to dictate things, and it's not always coming off in the way that you might see a more creative player like Fabregas doing it. And he's also doing less in terms of winning the ball as well, because obviously Chelsea is the team with the third most passes, I think, in the league. They don't have to do so much to win it. So he's making 5.14 tackles per game compared with 7.05 last season. And in terms of interceptions, only 2.29 compared with 4.22 last season. So, I mean, as Ollie says, Chelsea are more dominant than Leicester. This is what we expect, surely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of it is he's playing with Nemanja Matic as well, in a team that wants to control the game. And you do wonder, the trend is becoming just having one sitter. I do wonder whether Chelsea might look to do that now as well. And you just have Kante there, and then you put a couple of more attacking players in front of him, because you don't need, even against Leicester, you don't need Matic and Kante both sitting there. Neither of them are particularly creative with their passing either. I think, you know, he's had only Henderson and Santi Cazorla had more passes than him this season. I think he's created four chances because, like Ollie said, it's just not his game. But if he can be asked as a one sitter on his own to break play up and start moving it quickly and drive the ball again like he did with Leicester, I think we'll see a better player at Chelsea.
Speaking of Kante, the other two players that were key to Leicester's title win last year, Rory, were Mahrez and Vardy, and they're not looking quite as bright either this year. What do you think they need to do to kick on against Chelsea?
I think, actually, going back from like Arsenal, obviously the two players didn't go to Arsenal over the summer. They could have, but watching Chelsea against Arsenal, I think they could look at that as an example to use Sanchez and Walcott really taking advantage of the pace and the space at back left by Cahill and Luiz, just not knowing each other really as a partnership. So I think if they had enough space to work with, that would pay off, but I don't think it's going to work for them this weekend.
Do you think they're going to be just...
Yeah, I think it'll be stifled, and I just think the midfield will actually outrun them.
I mean, with Eden Hazard and Diego Costa, Chelsea got the firepower to really get at Leicester, and their defence hasn't looked good either. And we talked about Chelsea there with Gary Cahill. But yeah, Leicester are kind of there for the taking as well, maybe, after seeing what happened against Liverpool.
It's a weird one with Leicester, because they've been hit for four by Liverpool and by Man United. And in between, they've defended like they did last year. You know, their last couple of games, clean sheet against Southampton, clean sheet against Porto. I think they drew 0-0 with Arsenal earlier in the season. And, you know, last year, the second half of last season was all built on not conceding goals. Maybe if they can, it's a focus thing. I think it's a mental thing. Naturally, they won the league last year and they just lose that little bit of focus, and it gets a better size, they take more advantage. If they're fully at it and they defend deep, Leicester can still stop Chelsea, I think.
And with 6 goals in 7 games, Ollie, Diego Costa, he's the man to watch, surely.
Yeah, he's firing. He's, you know, maybe not single-handedly carrying Chelsea at the moment, but he's by far their star man. He's the one turning up every single week. Against Arsenal, I felt quite sorry. Well, it's hard to feel sorry for him, but you know, I felt as sorry as you could for Diego Costa, because he was completely isolated and trying to do it all on his own. And he's in that form that he had when they won the title, and he just needs everyone else to step up and do the same, basically.
Speaking about a team that needs to step up, Swansea travelled to the Emirates in another one of Saturday's games to play Arsenal. It's going to be Bob Bradley's introduction to the Premier League. And in Arsene Wenger, he might find himself with a sympathetic ear, because obviously Bob Bradley is an American. He's had a bit of a weird criticism from some quarters of the English game. You know, American, he can't understand soccer or whatever they want to call it. And Wenger obviously had a little bit of a hard time coming into English football as a Frenchman, who no one knew his profile because he's obviously managing in Japan. Rory, do you think, you know, he might put his arm around Bradley and say, come on, Bob, you can do this. I believe in you.
Yeah, I think of Wenger, he loves to see new people come in, especially if they've gone out of their way to try something different. Mm. Wenger, you know, took that experience in Japan and it made him slightly different to other players, other managers that could have come in. But I think he will get criticism because when you look at the record of American coaches going abroad, it's pretty limited. And I had a look and there was, in Europe, it's basically only of note is Greg Berhalter, who went to Hammarby in Sweden for one season. He only had 46 games to play with, but he had 39% win rate, and that was it. And then he was back up to Columbus Crew. So, and that was, you know, a couple 3 years ago. So, yeah, I think he's given a good account of himself so far. He's had some nice interviews. There was one with ESPN where he mentioned Jack to a King, the documentary, saying, like, this is how, if you want to understand Swansea and how what the club is, the soul of the club, then watch this documentary. And you've got to think, that's an actual proper bit of research he's done, and that's going to mean stuff to the fans.
He's at least gone on YouTube.
Yeah. Talking documentaries, do check out the 18 great documentaries to watch.
Look at this.
Squawker website, find it.
Who's that by?
Compiled by yours truly.
But don't search for yours truly, search for Rory Briggs, otherwise you'll be very disappointed. But yeah, just that's Bob Bradley. Has he got a chance of keeping Swansea up? Could he do what they need to do to stay safe in the Premier League this season, Ollie?
I think it's virtually impossible to tell at this moment in time, I think.
That's a very good answer.
I think if you look over the past decade, he's actually done very well. His win percentages at the USA was 53%, Egypt 66%, at Stabæk, I'm going to say that's Norwegian, how you pronounce it, in Norway 52%, and Le Havre 46%. So, you know, they're all good numbers, but this is obviously by far the biggest challenge he's had. And I think the interesting thing is, his reputation has sort of dipped over the past 5 years since he left the US. So it seems a slightly strange time to appoint him. But he's got a good record of bringing young players through, likes passing football. So, you know, he could be a good match for Swansea.
Well, he's also connected with the owners, the American owners. So they would understand what it's about, more so than Guidolin. But yeah.
So, I mean, obviously the American owners point there, but also the idea that Swansea are a club that have picked up talent where maybe other people haven't looked for it in the past, with Michu and even with Gary Monk as well. He was very good for a time as manager for maybe that season or 18 months where he looked pretty good. Do you think that Bradley could be a success? Do you think the tone of how some people have dismissed him early on is a bit dodgy? Or
and the academy players as well, when you mention that, you know, Ben Davis, Neil Taylor, Joe Allen, all these guys.
Even Leon Britton, I know he wasn't at academy, but they saw him before.
But I think they've lost their identity. Maybe it's partly the ownership change, but you don't really know where they're going at the moment. They're kind of still trying to pick up these cheapo deals in the transfer market, you know, Llorente and the likes. But the identity's gone. This club that builds these academy players that play a certain style of football, it's kind of disappeared since Brendan Rodgers, actually, to be honest. And I do worry for Swansea. I mean, the good thing for Bob Bradley is they've got some tough games out of the way already. I mean, Arsenal's not a great first game, but they've already played Liverpool, City, Chelsea. I think they played Leicester as well. So there's a good run of fixtures coming at some point. But at the moment, you look at Swansea, and if you're at another club, there's nothing about them that worries you at the moment, is there? And that's the big worry, I think.
I think if you load them into our comparison matrix on the site and you actually look at passes per game, passes completed and all that kind of stuff, it's all just one big kind of like...
What's their style? What's their style? What do they do?
But they've also also lost Llorente for injury. So they've got to rely on Borja Bastón, who's had three games, he's not done much.
Missed a couple of sitters against Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, he was great last season at in Ibar. But
I mean, as Stoke says, this was a team that when they were in the Championship, they were posting better possession figures than Barcelona, weren't they? There was a very, you know, obvious like way that they would like to play their football, and that, they are just a bit like everyone else, aren't they?
I think one of the problems with that is, though, they've had, what, three or four managers in 2-3 years now. They're becoming, you know, one of those clubs that you associate with sacking managers. Laudrup, Monk, Guidolin have all come and gone in a very short space of time, and there's only so long that you can go on with a, you know, a philosophy that doesn't need a certain manager to you know, imprint it. So I think that's sort of why they're losing their way a little bit, you know, just hiring and firing managers all the time,
got eroded over time.
Exactly.
One club that hasn't fired their manager anytime soon is at Arsenal. Arsene Wenger, as we have touched on in the pod very recently, is in his 20th season now with the Gunners. Are they legit title challengers? I think you were at his press conference earlier, Stobes. What do you think the man himself is thinking?
He's saying he thinks they are. He thinks there's been some sort of mental shift in the Arsenal squad, and this is the year where something's a little bit different and it's going to be their year. But I heard this last year. I heard this time last year. We were hearing it December last year. Remember when they beat Man City and everyone thought they were going to win the league? They beat Leicester, 10-man Leicester in the last minute, Danny Welbeck. Everyone thought they were going to win the league and they bottled it. There's an injury crisis that's going to come at some point as well, probably after the next international break. Look, they've got a chance, but they always do. It's just whether they have the mental strength to see it through in the final months of the season. They've signed some players that Wenger would say have that mental strength. Maybe Mustafi's one of them. Xhaka might be one of them. I don't know. You can't make a prediction with Arsenal. It's been the same for the last 10 or 11 years with them, let's be honest. You think they've got a chance, but they're never quite there. And the way Liverpool, Man City and Tottenham are playing at the moment, you would put Arsenal just behind them.
Yeah. You can basically only really tell whether they're challenges until like February when they've survived the winter. They've made it through.
Are they perishable
unscathed?
Is that the issue?
Yeah, they need to sort of hibernate like a nice bear. But yeah, I mean,
I don't think they're going to win any games if they hibernate. No. That's,
but if you wanted to go on the stats like now, how are they doing? It's actually not that bad. They're kind of up there. Liverpool, obviously the highest scorers, with 18 alongside City. And Arsenal have scored 16. So it's not bad.
That's playing without a striker, really, as well.
Yeah, they've also they've won the third most tackle, highest percentage of their tackles in the league. So they are they've got a bit more grit to them this season. That comes through the new signings and also a solid defence
and a couple of last minute winners as well. Southampton and Burnley. So that's old school Arsenal, isn't
Maybe
it?
Maybe that is the mental shift.
I mean, that's 4 points already that they've won in the last minute. So that can make a massive difference towards the end of the season because. Last year, the frustration for Arsenal is games like that. Southampton, they're playing Swansea on Saturday. Swansea beat them at the Emirates last year, and that was probably the end of Arsenal's title challenge. There's the kind of games they lose. And if they're turning draws into wins in the last minute, even when they don't deserve it, it's probably a positive sign.
It's a cliche, but it's a sign of champions. But speaking of another side who are in the running for the title, who had a bit of a knock before the international break, Spurs knocked them off their pedestal with their first Premier League defeat of the season, was Manchester City, who are going up against Everton this weekend. Both sides need to get back in the groove, really. Everton struggled to a draw before the international break as well. Ollie, do you think that Romelu Lukaku is exactly what City's defenders will not want to be facing in their first game back?
He's a handful for anyone he comes up against, but I think Otamendi in particular will probably relish coming up against him based on the last two games. Against Celtic, he had Moussa Dembele running him ragged. And then Spurs, Son was just all over him like a rash the whole game. So I think he might actually relish playing against a big old-fashioned bruiser up top. But Lukaku will fancy his chances as well. This is a City defence that I think is very much needing to improve. If City are going to win the league, they need their defence to improve. They've got John Stones playing well and that's it. Bravo looks shaky. The fullbacks aren't good enough. And Otamendi, I think, just isn't a leader in there. So Lukaku will fancy his chances. He's back on form. But it'll be interesting to see how they contain him, having gone from two players who are quick and good movement to more of a out-and-out centre-forward.
Mm-hmm. Just on the point of John Stones, Stopes, I mean, he's already kind of proven the logic of why Pep wanted him, why City wanted him. It's all coming right, really, isn't it?
I still wasn't sure about him, I've got to say, before they signed him. But no, I am now, because the improvement he's made straight away. I mean, he always struck me as a defender who didn't really want to defend. Do you know what I mean? He wanted to be on the ball, but he's actually defending first now and being excellent on the ball. And, that Tottenham game, he was the only one in that goalkeeper, back four, and the sitter, Fernando. He was the only one who looked comfortable on the ball and with his defensive duties. And he's going to have a massive game because Everton will be up for it. The fans will be on his back as well. The Everton fans, they'll give him a bit of grief. They're known for that as well. So it'll be a big mental test for him as well. But I fancy Stones there.
Definitely. Is there anything Everton can take from how they beat City to kind of, bring it back at them at the Etihad this weekend?
Well, I mean, if you think about the game, Tottenham won 22 tackles to City's 14, and that's going to be Idrissa Gueye, Gareth Barry's job. But in the 1-1 draw against Palace the last time out, Gueye only won 13% of his tackles. So he didn't really turn up as he has done in the season. So he's going to have to really up his, you know, come on.
Is he the kind of focus for you? He's the guy who can break what City want to do in midfield.
He will, because, I mean, when you have that midfield that City have, Everton are going to struggle. Like, it's going to be on them the whole time. Even though City's defence are going to struggle to kind of cope with Lukaku, he's not going to get the service, really. He's also only won 29% of his headed duels this season. And I think Everton, if they're going to learn from Spurs, they're going to keep on the floor and attack with, like, on the counter, basically.
I think the big thing to learn from Spurs is using the width, firstly, isolate the fullbacks. And Everton have got Lukaku, you know, Bolasie out wide, they've got speed. And I think it's just, as soon as you win the ball, you look to turn that City defence and put them under pressure. Because other than Stones, like we were saying, none of them really look comfortable under pressure. And Kolarov, if he plays, it'll be a crazy decision, because he was absolutely rubbish against Tottenham.
I think Bolasie's out for it as well, because he's only had no shots on target in three games, and he's only created two chances in two games. So from a guy who's seemingly dangerous, a dangerous partner with Lukaku as well, he's going to have to be the man.
Maybe Aruna Kone's the man who's going to
Or a sort of Niasse, you know, surprise miracle off the bench.
The narrative of he comes back and does the business against City. That was a wonderful interview, actually. I thought was it in the Guardian?
Guardian,
yeah, very, very good. If you haven't read it, I'd definitely check it out. But please do return to Squawker afterwards. But anyway, we're going to move on now. Actually, were there any other matches you want to touch on this weekend in the Premier League?
Yeah, briefly, the Tottenham one, Tottenham West Brom. It's the Chadley derby.
Chadley
derby. I mean, Spurs. Obviously, Spurs' title challenge unravelled against West Brom last year with a 1-1 draw, and they drew 1-1 at the Hawthorns as well. So West Brom have become a little bit of a bogey team for Spurs recently. And Chadley, you know, he's one of those guys, he's been sold by Tottenham, he's going to want to play well. And he's flying at the moment. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists in 4 games. He's the danger man for them. Mm. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he turns up against Spurs.
Are you sad to see him go?
I was a little bit, but then you've got to think, it's basically him or Son going. So, you know, if you look at it that way,
it's good business. Yeah.
I think Chadley... Yeah, he's the kind of player that is useful to have around, and take him out of a top 6 team, he'll be a top player for anyone else. But he's just not quite at the level to be a starter for Tottenham. But he is a good player, and he'll be their main danger man, I think.
Fair enough. We're just going to move around to Europe now, just to kind of set the scene for what's going to be some interesting battles this weekend and in the rest of the season to come. In the Bundesliga, we see third take on second as the Borussia Dortmund host Hertha Berlin. I mean, even with Ancelotti and his dodgy league record, I mean, it's still Bayern's to lose, isn't it, the Bundesliga this year?
It is. I think it's going to play into to Bayern's hands as well, having a third party involved with Hertha Berlin. I don't think they'll last the stretch of the season.
They're more like not so much a third party, maybe like a 2.5 party.
Yeah, it's like in politics when the third party comes in and steals votes from the other side.
Are you saying Hertha Berlin are the Liberal Democrats?
The UKIP, I suppose. But careful how you say that. But yeah.
Let's move on.
But no, Hertha Berlin, they haven't really had a big test. They had Bayern, they lost 3-0.
Yeah.
All the other games were kind of smallish teams, including Schalke, who aren't great anymore. It's going to be Dortmund's one this time. So Dortmund are going to leapfrog them and then keep at Bayern. So at this stage, it's kind of still 2-horse.
Mm. It's almost like the same question in Serie A as well. I mean, Juve are back on top. They had a bit of a stumble at the start of the season, but they're back in first. And it's going to be second versus first, Napoli take on Roma. Mm. I mean, Napoli just lost Milic as well for what? It could be 7 months, they say now, with that torn ACL.
Yeah.
That's surely going to... Their challenge is gone already, hasn't it?
You'd have to replace him. Yeah, it's a big, big shame, actually. He started really well, got 7 goals in 9 games. You know, he looked like the kind of striker that could fill Higuain's boots, and Napoli needed that. You know, Higuain got such a high percentage of their goals last year. They needed, a goal-scoring striker. And without him, you've got to think who's going to come in. Gabbiadini, I think, is probably the main one. They don't really have a lot of depth up there.
Yeah.
Gabbiadini's only got 1 goal in 6 games.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've been reliant on a main goal scorer for a while. Cavani before Higuain was scoring a lot of goals for them. So until January, they can't really fix that problem. Roma didn't really do much this summer. I can't see them really challenging. And Juve, even though they're not at their best, I think they're still far too strong for anyone else in that league.
It almost feels, I think we said in a previous pod, it's like they've bought Higuain to sew up Serie A, and then the rest of the players will focus on the Champions League.
And Pjanic as well. You know, they're weak, directly weakening their rivals. It's something that Bayern have done for years and years, and Juve are doing it now. So
Interestingly, Ancelotti said this week that both teams can fight Juve for the title.
Like combining like Transformers or what? Like,
yeah, together.
Into one super team.
As a combined 11, yeah.
Yeah. Is that allowed, though? Because I'm sure that's not in the rules, is it?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a shame, that's a shame. In La Liga as well, the title race is wide open after Real Madrid stumble. I think they're going for like, the record draws now after getting the record wins because they just keep drawing. It's bizarre. Barcelona, Messi's still not back. But I think Atletico are top at the moment, aren't they? So it's all set up for quite a big few weeks.
It's a weird one considering it's supposed to be the league that's predictable, isn't it? And I think 5 points separate first and 11th in La Liga at the moment. And Atletico Madrid were the team that started the league slowly. And like you said, they're top now. And Barcelona have had a wobble. Real Madrid are having a wobble. So quite exciting. You've got the Basque Derby this weekend as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who are you going for?
You've got to go for Atletico, haven't you?
Yeah, you got to. I've been to Bilbao, it's wonderful. Well, yeah. It's a great city. But yeah, I mean, Simeone, just on that point, he's done wonders for La Liga, hasn't he? He's made it far more interesting, the competition, for people not invested in the big two.
Yeah, yeah. I think Atletico are flying at the moment. They're doing really well. Only them and Real Madrid are still unbeaten. Barcelona have lost twice already, which is
Celta
quite
Vigo
amazing.
As well. They're bogeys. You talk about West Brom earlier. That's,
yeah, exactly. It'd be great to see Simeone win something again from a neutral point of view. You know, the 2013-14 season, he performed absolute miracles doing what he did. So it'd be great to see them, you know, win something again this year, especially with his contract situation all up in the air. So, yeah.
And Griezmann was talking about a fear of relegation earlier this season. So as Stowe said, it's a real big turnaround for him to now be top and leading the title race. But speaking of French players, going over to Ligue 1 now, where Nice are another surprise top team at the top of the table in the French top flight. Balotelli has kind of stepped into the boots left by Ben Arfa last season. And although he got sent off, I think, in the space of two yellow cards, in the space of 4 minutes, was it, last game? Where after he scored in the winner, he's gonna be banned for the next game. But do you think with him, whether he's on the pitch or not through suspension, can Nice do the unthinkable? Can they keep this run going all the way to the end of the season?
Well, funnily enough, he'd missed five of their league games, and they'd won three and drawn two of them. Without him this season. So I think, on judging from that, yes, but he is a big loss because he suddenly became the player he was supposed to be at some point in his career. But yeah, I think also it's not like they've really jumped ahead of the pack. They're just a point ahead of second place. So and they've also got tricky games coming up. They've got Lyon this weekend. Then they got a trip away to Salzburg, not that far actually from Nice. But and then
EasyJet will get you there.
Yeah, it's casual. Yeah, it's casual. Yeah, yeah. And you've got the Mets, who are only a point below Lyon. So,
Monaco actually destroyed them as well. Actually.
Yeah. Not easy, but I think Balotelli's going to watch on and sort of give his own enthusiasm. He posted on Instagram this week, having not got a call up for Italy, with some new bizarre blonde afro hairstyle and moustache.
It's the only real response you can give, isn't it?
Yeah. It's typical of Mario.
I think they could challenge top three, but I think Ligue 1 will be a lot more competitive this year. PSG don't seem to have the same wow factor they had last year. Unai Emery isn't renowned for being a league manager; he's more of a cup manager. I think that's transferred already this season. And Monaco are a decent side. You know, I was at Wembley, watched the Tottenham game, which was disappointing. But Monaco are not a bad side. They've got some good players in there. So I think it'll be a two horse race this year.
Do you think Ligue 1 gets a bit of a bad press? Getting more interesting with every year, maybe?
I mean, it's been so predictable the last few years, hasn't it? And like Ollie says, Monaco are good. They got really... When I was watching them against Tottenham, there were a couple of players you thought they'll be over here in a couple of years at a Champions League club as well. But yeah, I think you just needed someone to clip PSG's wings a little bit, and they happened to do it themselves by changing their manager. So, all good.
Speaking of clipping wings, on Monday night, it will be a Liverpool versus Manchester United, Jurgen Klopp versus Jose Mourinho. Systems versus individualism, you could say. Is there any chance that Mourinho, I mean, he failed to do so against Pep Guardiola at Old Trafford. Can he go to Anfield and clip Jurgen Klopp's wings in front of the home crowd? What do you reckon, Ollie?
It's a tough one because United, you don't really know what they're about yet. You know, they started the season very well, but they've had a bit of a wobble. And coming up against Liverpool, who are fresher than most teams without having European football, you don't really know what to expect. I think Liverpool can definitely get at United. They've got arguably the most exciting attack in the Premier League at the moment. you know, with that front three, Coutinho, Firmino and Mane, you've got pace, you've got finishing ability, you've got a bit of everything in there. Mm. So it's going to be a big test for United defensively. But it's a massive, massive game for Mourinho. You know, it could define his first season at United, this game. It's massive.
Mm. As Ollie says there, like they're a unit, the Liverpool attack. They're all complementary. They all work together as a nice, like, kind of, you know, a complete set of players, really. Liverpool, because of that, have created the most chances in the league so far this season and joint top scorers. But United have the highest... Oh, sorry, only Crystal Palace have a higher percentage of successful one-on-one duels than Man United. So can their individuals break through the system, Rory, or is it going to be a case of them being smothered?
No, I think it's going to be smothering for them. I just think that Klopp's got a team here. Mourinho hasn't really. He thinks he has. He's got, you know, a result against Leicester, but I can't see it. But yeah, but I think if he can kind of go back to what he was like at Chelsea, then there's a chance. But I think Klopp's going to outsmart him.
After seeing what happened against City, do you think Mourinho might say, look, I trusted you guys to follow my game plan against City and it didn't quite work? Are they just going to go to look and shut the match down at Anfield now, do you reckon, Stopes?
The problem is you shut the match down and then you concede a goal and you're in big, big trouble. And, you know, that's what happened against City that first half. He had to wait until half time to get in and change anything because they'd gone out with a plan and it'd gone tits up. Can I say that?
Probably not.
They'd gone out with a plan and it'd gone wrong. It gone wrong in the first half an hour. I think at Anfield and under the lights, I know it's a massive cliche, but the place is going to be absolutely buzzing. The noise, the intensity, you know, Liverpool run further than anyone anyway. They're going to tear into Man United. And, you know, when Tottenham did it to Man City, we all said, well, Tottenham and Liverpool are the two teams that can really do that to you. Yeah. And that's exactly how Liverpool are going to go at Man United. And have they got the technical ability and the organisation to deal with the ferocity of that press? I don't think so.
I think United are actually bottom of that table for distance covered as well per game, aren't they? So it is.
They are ploddy, aren't they? Mm. They're very ploddy at the moment. Even, you know, they brought in Pogba, who's a supreme athlete, but they're still very predictable. Maybe it's a little bit like we talk about the big clubs. They're controlling the game a bit. They wait until they get into the final third before injecting a bit of energy into it, whereas Liverpool just charge around for 90 minutes and they can do it.
Well, I guess the two players that embody the two different approaches, Henderson versus Pogba, which is set to be a bit of a battle on Monday night. You've got the energy, the athleticism of Henderson, and maybe the kind of lackadaisical, you know, kind of quality of Pogba that's not quite as bruising as Liverpool's midfield. They've had some contrasting fortunes this season. Henderson's coming into form under Klopp. But over the international break, Pogba arguably had a bit of a better time of it in the end for France, Ollie.
Yeah, he definitely did. I mean, the thing with Henderson is, you know, he's a limited footballer. Let's not, you know, make
he's
any
gone
bones
in.
About it. He is he is a limited player. He's very English.
not positive.
But, yeah, not in a positive way. But he started the season very well. He knows his role at Liverpool and he's actually adapted his role very well. He's gone from a box-to-box midfielder covering, you know, a lot of ground to sitting in front of the back four and letting the front four or five you know, wreak havoc on opposition defences. I think for England in midweek, we saw him going back to, you know, his old type and trying to do too much. The no look back pass that nearly resulted in a goal was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
It was vintage Gerrard. It was
worse than Gerrard. The no look part of it was
when you take the captain's armband.
We're drawing 0-0 away to Slovenia. Yeah. You've done a no look back pass to their striker. It was outrageous, but. Yeah. I think going back to Liverpool, he knows his role and he'll just slot in and do the simple things, which is, you know, what he should be doing. But yeah, he's still a very important player for Liverpool. They need him because without him, you know, their team is very, very focused on the attack. They need him sitting there just, you know, mopping everything up.
So you said earlier about the redundancy of Matic and Kante. I mean, just on the England point, it almost seemed like when Dier was struggling, Henderson dropped back to try and help him and they just didn't leave him alone. He was just on his shoulder for the rest of the game. It showed his poor decision making, really.
Yeah, they were on each other's toes a bit. I don't know whether that's because Dier wasn't playing very well. He wasn't really zipping the ball into Dele Alli or out wide like he did at the Euros, for example. But yeah, Henderson's a box-to-box player in that role and he wasn't doing it, was he? He was picking the ball up off his defenders, trying to be Steven Gerrard, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was trying to be the all-action captain, doing absolutely everything, and it didn't work. But like Ollie says, with all of these players, you know, they all look rubbish for England. Theo Walcott being flying for Arsenal looked like he couldn't kick a ball for England. So I think he'll go straight back to type, and he's been superb for them this season.
We're just talking about Pogba playing for France. Mm. He obviously scored the winner against the Netherlands. It was, I mean, the goalkeeper didn't exactly,
dubious,
you know,
goal.
It was, you know, it was a little bit fortunate. It was still a very good goal, but a bit fortunate. But look at their stats for the league so far this season. Henderson, although he may be limited, according to Ollie, he has completed the most passes per 90, both attempted and completed in the league so far. Whereas Pogba has the most through balls in the league this season, attempted and completed again. And only Sadio Mane has completed more take-ons in the Liverpool squad than Paul Pogba has this season. Yeah. So
Pogba's also taken 22 shots and one goal.
Ooh.
So
inefficient.
Yeah. And he's misplaced the 12th highest number of passes in the league.
Wow.
Those 11, those 11 ahead of him, though. Who are they? Well, they shouldn't be named. No.
Danny Drinkwater's top by 21 passes.
Wow. So we're not expecting Pogba to turn it on at Anfield then?
No, Pogba's his class, isn't he? But he still hasn't quite found his role at United just yet. I think last couple of games he's been better. Stoke, he was unlucky. He probably should have scored, but I think his overall performance was good. So I think, you know, he's getting there. Mm. They just need to build their team around him a bit more, I think.
Which brings us to the would you rather question of the podcast. Would you rather be limited old Jordan Henderson in the wonderful clicking system of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, or would you rather be Pogba, the most expensive midfielder in the world, in a team that's not quite working to its maximum efficiency under Jose Mourinho at Man United? Ollie, since you called the man himself limited, I'll let you go first.
100% Pogba.
Yeah?
He's by far more talented, and he's just so much cooler as well. You look at his, you know, on Instagram, well, he changes his hair all the time. Compare Pogba's Instagram to Henderson's Bebo page. You know, on and off the pitch, he's got that stardust that Henderson doesn't. So Pogba, any day.
Well, so we've seen so many great, talented footballers not quite win the honours they should in teams that don't quite function. So would you still be Pogba, or would you, you know, maybe a bit of Henderson going on there?
I'd still be Pogba. Very, very early days for him at Man United and for Jose Mourinho to give it a couple of years. Like Ollie said, he's the most expensive, best midfielder in the world. And if you offered Jurgen Klopp the swap, Pogba for Henderson, guarantee you he'd take it.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Rory?
Henderson, actually.
Yeah.
I just think he's just a moral man. He doesn't need to look where he passes.
Well, when he stared down Diego Costa that time, that was vine worthy.
So. You know, he has run with his knees before, but now he's really improved. So I think, you know, got to give him the credit.
I think one thing in Henderson's favour, if he captains Liverpool to a title, that's massive. You know, Gerrard was obviously never able to do that. And this is the biggest opportunity Liverpool have, arguably. You know, they're flying at the moment and they've got no additional fixture. So if Henderson captains Liverpool, then maybe the answer will be different.
So I remember when we did the pre-Manchester Derby pod, you kind of balked at the idea of that being the biggest game in British football. Is Liverpool versus United still the big one for you?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, you're from the area. I lived in Manchester. They're the two biggest, best supported clubs in the country. You go abroad, it's Liverpool, Man United everywhere, and they hate each other. They actually hate each other.
Look at that ship canal taking her jobs from the docks. Oh, I mean,
you really feel this rivalry, and yet, for me, 100% the biggest game in the Premier League.
Well, everyone's going to be watching that on Monday night, but before we get there, I want to know your match of the season. I want to know your match of the weekend to watch and why. Ollie, I'm going to go with you first.
I
never thought I'd say this, but I'm quite looking forward to seeing a Neil Warnock side play this weekend. Ooh. So Cardiff City are playing Bristol City on Friday night, the big Friday night game. No Premier League game this weekend.
Mm. Intercity.
Box office stuff.
And Cardiff, so since Warnock came in, he signed four players on a free transfer, all Premier League rejects, basically. Junior Hoylett, Shamak, Kieran Richardson.
What happened to Shamak's hair
as well? Sol Bamba.
Yeah. He's like 10 years older.
Yeah, he lost his club and hair at the same time.
just looked at himself really in the mirror and thought, this is enough.
Yeah, there's not that many fixtures, actually. In Spain, I think there's only four on Saturday anyway, and Italy is only three games. So Friday night, I'm going to settle down and watch Cardiff. Yeah.
Which is why I'm going to head over to the MLS again.
Again?
Again. Last time I was on, I said, FC Dallas versus LA Galaxy. But this is actually quite an interesting one. This is the Canadian derby. Montreal Impact versus Toronto FC, featuring Drogba, who scored 10 goals in 22 games, versus Giovinco, the little ant.
The atomic ant.
Yeah.
And Drake's going to be there
as
well.
Giovinco scored 16 goals, 25 games. They've also sold out the game. which is pretty good. Good for American football or Canadian football. North American football. All the footballs.
Inclusive football. Yeah,
and that's their 10th sellout of the season.
Wow.
So good on them.
Just on Toronto as well, they've obviously got Bob's son patrolling things in midfield, Michael Bradley.
Well, nice call back to the point earlier about Mr. Bradley. Yeah. Any kind of a Landon Donovan-esque loans to Swansea, do you reckon?
Possibly. He came to the Premier League before at Villa and didn't really make his mark, but he's a good player. You know, he's got, I think, nearly 100 caps for the US, if not, he's already reached it. So, yeah, why not? He's a very good player. They've got three MVPs, Toronto FC, which is more than most clubs. So perhaps that's why they're pulling in the numbers this year.
I would also say Wolfsburg-Leipzig is pretty good in the Bundesliga. I think Leipzig, they've got Oliver Burke.
You were going to have that one as well, were you, Stobes?
No, I was going to go for the Bass Derby, but I mentioned it earlier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you've already touched on it. Should we have a little bit of a chat about the Bass Derby? I mean, Basque Country is fantastic for football. If you have been over there, it's a very passionate place. Are there any players in particular that you would like to pick out from either squad?
I'll tell you one, because Tottenham tried to sign Iñaki Williams from Athletic Bilbao last January, and he ended up signing a new contract. And now he's got a €50 million release clause. And as we know, Athletic Bilbao make you pay the release clause. They've done the same with Aymeric Laporte as well. But I think Iñaki Williams potentially is a fantastic footballer in the Premier League. Yeah.
Is he what Vincent Janssen should have been?
He's what Spurs should have signed him, basically. And then after that, they ended up going for Michy Batshuayi. And then when they ended up signing Vincent Janssen, it's a completely different profile of player to Iñaki Williams and Michy Batshuayi. So a bit odd the way that actually happened.
Well, Stobes, it feels like you've gone from not having a match to a fantastic kind of ending to the pod there. So, we're going to end it there. Lots of great football to come. We'll have another podcast with Nick English on Monday morning, obviously focusing a bit more on Liverpool versus United and the Champions League games ahead. Ollie, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers, Greg.
Yeah, no problem. And Rory, once again, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
I love being here. Yeah.
And Stobes, we'll have to get you on a bit more.
Yeah, we should do this more often. Yeah.
You're busy like checking out all the stories and stuff. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read it, there's a great story on Squawk at the moment about the TFL charge they're going to levy towards levy, that's a bit of a pun back in there, towards the Tottenham Hotspur to rename the station near White Hart Lane. We broke that one, didn't we?
We did indeed.
You might see a follow-up reports elsewhere, but yeah, check out Squawker for the original source for that one. But anyway, please do check out Squawker for that and many more stories, and join us again soon.